Today, I'm going to share with you an episode where I was the guest on the podcast, The Therapy Brothers, with Brannon Patrick and Tyler Patrick. Now, this particular episode, Brannon was my host, and Tyler was out of town, so it was just the two of us. You might know Brannon Patrick. He was the expert on the previous podcast called The Betrayed, The Addicted, and The Expert. Brannon and I have known each other for a lot of years, and we've run in a lot of the same circles, and it was really fun to connect with him and catch up with him on this podcast. And he encouraged me to share it on my platform as well, so that's why I'm sharing this episode with all of you. Before we dive into this episode, I want to let you know about a free trust-building resource called The First Steps to Rebuilding Trust. You can find this course using the link in the show notes. It's free, and it's several videos that will help walk you through the steps of rebuilding trust. If you're the person who broke the trust, if you're the person who's been betrayed by broken trust, or you're just working to figure out how to navigate couples recovery, this is a great introduction to rebuilding trust. So many people have downloaded it and found it very helpful, and I'm giving it away entirely free. Once again, use the link in the show notes, and I'll send it to you right away. In this episode, Brannon Patrick and I talk about rebuilding trust. We get into a lot of the complexities and nuances around rebuilding trust and how truly difficult it can be to rebuild trust, even though we both believe very strongly it's totally possible to do so. It was a real treat to be on the podcast with Brannon. So without further ado, let's jump into the podcast with Brannon Patrick on The Therapy Brothers.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Today is a special episode. It's a different episode. And I don't want to spend too much time just talking about dumb stuff. I just want to get into it with my guest here. And so to introduce my guest, Jeff Sturr, this guy is, he's like one of the original OGs when it comes to betrayal trauma, sex addiction. When I came into the space, he was a guy that I looked up to. That I remember thinking things like, dang, if I could only have a practice like Jeff's. And he was helping people. Like he was creating content, presenting at conferences, and has been in the game for a long, long time and has done a lot of good. So to have Jeff on today is a huge treat for me. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Thanks for having me, man. So good to connect with you.
Yeah. And Jeff and I were just talking just off air here, and just so many stories and so many things. We have seen the whole field of betrayal trauma, sex addiction, couples work shift a lot through our years. And so we're going to use our collective wisdom today and talk about one of the most important topics. I think one that we get questions about a lot, a ton of questions about trust rebuilding. And so Jeff, let's just back up a little bit. Let's just take square one. We get people in our office. A lot of times couples come in. Discovery just happened recently, and things are broken. If you're starting square one and you're just there starting off trying to figure out how to rebuild your relationship and rebuild trust, what's the first thing you do? Like, where do you even start?
You got to tell the truth, man. You got to tell it to yourself and then work up to telling it to your partner. Mm. And I say work up because sometimes it's a process to even tell yourself the truth. Yep. And you can't tell your partner the truth. But I think truth is huge. I think you trust will be impossible to rebuild if you're still living in secrets and hiding and denial. I just think that that's such a human response. We all want to hide when we're confronted with something embarrassing or shameful, or we know we've crossed lines or been offside. So it's a very human thing. But I just think truth to me is like gravity. Like you can't, if you can't speak up and be honest about what you've done or where you've been or how you're feeling or what's going on for you or all those things like that, it's so impossible to move out of that space. So that's where I would start.
Isn't it interesting to see people try to rebuild trust, just trying to avoid being honest, but wanting to rebuild trust? And it's like,
yeah,
do you realize like, you can't, like, without honesty, the trust rebuild is not going to happen. I want to play devil's advocate with you just a little bit, Jeff,
and sure,
just say,
let's talk. Yeah.
Okay, you say truth, You got to just get honest. You got to start with the truth. But if I do get honest, or I start with the truth, won't that hurt my partner more? Like, isn't it good for me to like have them avoid some things because it's so painful?
Oh man. Right. That's the question.
Yeah.
That comes up all the time. And what I think what's tricky about that question is that both things are true. It absolutely will hurt your partner. There's no way around that. And so if the goal is to not hurt your partner, then we need to get a new goal. The partner is already hurt.
Yep.
So now the question is how do we promote healing with what's already been hurt? Because there's already, something's been discovered. There's already been a conversation, a discovery, a sense, a feeling, something's off. And so the whole idea of like, well, I don't want to hurt my partner, it's too late for that.
Right.
Like, we're already in it. And so I have a lot of guys, well, and again, I have all the love and respect for these guys I work with. I'm sure you do too. Like, it's just like, these are good people trying to do their best. But there is a lot of thinking errors that happen, which is, you know, I'm not going to keep saying more now. I've said too much already. So let's turn this thing around. And it's like, no. It's like, you can't stop surgery in the middle. Like, no.
Right.
We got to see this thing through.
Yep.
And the way to close this thing up is to recognize that you're going to be doing two things at once. You're going to be a source of pain and a source of comfort all at the same time.
Yeah.
You're going to be hurting them while you're healing them. And that is one of the most difficult things to tolerate as the unfaithful person, the recovering person. That is just like, everything in you is going to want to lean into the, I just want to be a source of comfort. And the way you're reflexively going to do that is by going back into hiding.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Wow. That was well put. You almost have to hurt them in order to step into the healing process. And I think what you said, Jeff, is like, it's what people don't understand is,
yeah,
I'll avoid pain. I'll avoid the truth, mm-hmm, just at the cost of the foundational,
yeah,
destruction to the relationship. Right. Like, makes no sense, but that's what a lot of people, they get in that mindset because they're protecting.
I'll save this thing at my partner's expense.
Yeah. Which in the end,
yeah,
destroys it.
Yeah. And it's hard because you will hurt your partner by saying all, like, the rest of the story. You just will. They know part, mm-hmm, of it. Now you've got to tell the rest and start getting real and honest about what's happening. But I don't know. I would say more often than not, and I almost dare say almost every partner I've talked to will tell me that what hurts worse for them is the cover-up more than the crime.
Yeah.
It's the cover-up. It's the manipulation. It's the avoidance. It's the not knowing. I mean, horror movies thrive on this formula of, right, of like what you don't see. That is just terrifying for us. Alfred Hitchcock figured that out. His movies weren't gory. It was just all this suspense. Mm-hmm. You just never knew what was around the corner or whether that person was really who they said they were. I mean, our brains go crazy with that stuff. It's so overwhelming to us. So to have your own reality taken from you, you're living in a horror movie in your own life. It's awful.
Right. If something bad happens right in front of me, at least I know it happens. I see it. But when I'm in suspense, then how can I have safety in a relationship? You can't.
Especially with the person who promised they would be there for you and they wouldn't hurt you, which is funny. I mean, I don't know that I ever promised my wife I would never hurt her.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's my intention. I think in my young, immature 20-whatever-year-old mind, I was thinking like, yeah, I'm not going to hurt her.
Right.
Right. I care about her. So we have to sort of redefine what it means, right? Not hurting them means also repairing the damage we do. And that may involve more discomfort for everyone. But on the other side of it, there's healing.
There's growth. There's healing.
Yeah. Growth. Good.
Yeah.
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 But if you're unwilling to step into the pain, then you'll never get that. You'll never get that growth. And yeah, okay. So yeah, that's you know, another question I have, and you kind of answered this, but what are some of the biggest misses when it comes to rebuilding trust? So if I'm actually, my heart is actually wanting to rebuild trust, what are some things that just like a lot of people don't understand and a lot of people miss?
Well, I think one of the biggest misses is, I think Doug Weiss calls it the hurry up guy. There's a tendency to want to rush the process. And look, I know therapists, a lot of times we get accused of dragging things out, you know, maybe like chiropractors, right? Well, you'll need 100 more visits. You know, it's there can be maybe this cynicism around, well, of course it's going to take a long time. You guys need job security or whatever, but it's like, you know, I really wish I could speed this up.
Yeah.
I think good therapists, I know I consider myself someone who really cares deeply about helping people and getting it right. I'm always looking for ways to speed this up. Man, if we could find a faster way.
Yeah, absolutely.
but it just takes, it takes time, but not just time. It takes educated time. It takes purposeful, intentional skills and other types of things in that time frame. So I think one of the big misses is the time frame. And this isn't just the person who broke the trust. We all expect the person who broke the trust to want to hurry this up and get it over because it's so painful. But even a betrayed partner, of course, doesn't want to live in this place. And there's ways that they can escape out of the process early. And so I think if everybody, this is a difficult thing to ask, but to slow it down and drop the reactivity and settle into a process, a long-term process of healing, and make it a more human kind of experience instead of expecting everyone to be superhuman.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I heard you say a couple things, time and a process.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of times when they come in to actually address this issue, the pain point is the relationship. So it's give me the checklist of the things I can do in order to get back to something good in this relationship. And, and that checklist gets in the way of the actual long-term process.
Perfect.
You know, it doesn't build trust to check things off the checklist. What builds trust is to be a partner that has strength and can create security. And so in order to actually resonate in that way in a relationship, it's going to take some underneath work to actually show up as that type of a partner.
Yeah.
Right, Jeff?
Yeah. And I would add, I mean, what you're building on here is good, which is there's a tendency sometimes with the checklist to also put the relationship like right in front and try and get back. That's part of the speeding it up is let's just get back to our relationship. Let's just get back and, you know, go on dates or I don't know, just let's just, you know, move on, create something new. And, you know, you can't build something new with pieces you don't even understand or aren't even there yet. Or I mean, there's just a lot of individual components that need to be on the table or that need to show up or be at least reinforced so that there can be a more successful, longer term build out for the relationship. And that process, getting that balance right, admittedly is more challenging than I think a lot of people realize.
Jeff, what do you think about like somebody who is externally motivated by the relationship to do their recovery work? Is that helpful? Is that a big problem in terms of trust? Like, let's say I just want my wife to think I'm good again. And so I'm going to go to all my meetings. I'm going to go to my therapy. I'm going to do that. And I'm going to make sure that she sees that I do all of those things. Is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing?
I think it's a normal thing.
Common?
Yeah, I think it's pretty common. And I think it's a fine place to start, honestly. I think that's where most people start. I mean, let's be honest. Like, there's a lot of things I probably wouldn't have cared about in my own marriage or in my parenting journey if it wasn't hurting the people I care about. And all of a sudden, I'm super motivated. And I think that's how we're wired to push each other and grow. I don't know that I can generate the kind of motivation or compassion, care, insight, whatever, growth, just in a vacuum. We bump into each other. We step on each other. We hurt each other. And to sort of act like that shouldn't be happening is to deny the whole social baseline of how we're connected and how we're interconnected. And what our motivations are. So do I think that that ever goes, that that should go away and you should someday be so self-actualized that your motivation just is this fountain of goodness and
pure goodness?
And, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not convinced that there's ever a state for that. I think I am motivated long-term by those I care about and want to be close to. And I think that some of that stuff should eventually, you know, go from maybe spark to, you know, coals and like a little, you know, have a war, you know, where I'm maintaining things and sort of fueling my own journey and stuff like that. But it's always, the input is always there from the outside. It has to be.
Yep. Yep.
And I think
I love the honesty to that answer, 'cause it's true.
Yeah.
What you're saying is true and it's common. But what I see is in the long run with recovery, somebody gets to a point where, whether my partner smiles at me or gives me sex or it thinks I'm awesome or whatever, my recovery is going to persist regardless. And so
for like, sure, that's the coals.
Yeah. That's the coals. And that's what can really start to nurture trust, I think,
yes,
in a relationship is unto myself. I am working this. I am changing. I am shifting.
And that's why I purposely use the word coals versus flame, because if the initial flames can get blown out so easily by an external thing. But coals, and you get a bunch of them together, that'll still provide some heat for a while, even if the source is gone. And so a guy in long-term recovery absolutely needs to get to a place where he's stoking coals. And yes, you'll need input from the outside. And I think long-term, I've seen this before, where you've got some really difficult situations where, and this is rare, Brandon, I really do think this is rare, but I want to speak to it because I think we don't talk about it enough, that sometimes you get a betrayed partner that is so wounded, so scared, has had so many injuries, sometimes prior to their marriage, and they absolutely cannot take the risk. They can't do it.
Yeah.
They won't do it.
Yeah.
They won't move into giving anything sort of reciprocating back, any sort of connection, affection, closeness, touch, words, anything. And that relationship is ultimately going to struggle and probably not make it.
Yep.
And now you might be listening to this as a betrayed partner saying, well, it's not my fault, right? Like I didn't, you know, and I have tremendous deep compassion for the situation somebody may be in that situation, but I do think it requires a level of risk.
Yep.
And the willingness to take that risk and stretch and add some external input and connection and reciprocity, that's the foundation of attached relationships.
Yep.
That's the contract. That's what we do.
Yep.
And there's a time where it can be, and it tends to be a little more one-sided, and there tends to be a space where it's harder to have that safety and trust and connection and security and stuff. But ultimately, in the rebuilding trust process, they have to come together.
Yep. It has to be both sides. And, you know, as someone is working hard to be a trustworthy human being,
yeah,
that other person has to at some point extend trust to know whether there's trust there or be vulnerable to know whether there's trust. It has to happen. And yeah.
Perfect. Yeah. You'll never know. It's like, you can't prove something that you're not experiencing. And so if you're like, well, I don't feel like they're trustworthy, what trust are you trying to extend? I mean, those are hard questions and they're challenging questions, but I do find that if a betrayed partner is stuck in that place of not being able to move forward, build that connection, or they feel like I shouldn't have to provide any outside input, they should just be self-sustaining. I think yes and no.
Right.
Yes. Yes. They need to have a nice hot coal bed that they're stoking and working on.
Yep.
And if they're going to be in relationship with you, there needs to also be some input there as well. And can a single guy who's not in a relationship build a strong individual recovery by himself? Uh-huh. He'll also have external inputs too.
Right.
We're just built like that.
Yep. He'll still have external inputs.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, for people listening, go back and listen to what Jeff just said and the depth to what he's actually saying, because I think trust building seems so automatic, like, well, I'll just be a good person and then it'll like get rebuilt.
Uh-huh.
But there's complexities to it, and you're kind of getting into those complexities of like, you know, somebody working hard to be a trustworthy person, somebody actually taking the risk to trust, to be vulnerable. And then it's a process over time. Mm-hmm. It's not a one-time event. Trust can get destroyed so easily.
Yes.
And then it's rebuilt so slowly and yeah, all of that. So, Jeff, what are some of the important ingredients or just things that need to be there for trust to happen?
I'm going to use a word that's super loaded. I think you've talked about it on your podcast, safety.
Mm-hmm. That is loaded.
Oh man. Probably the most loaded word, I don't know, in this process is safety because, and I'll tell you my experience with it is that when you say the word safety, and I'm going to generalize big time here. It's going to sound very stereotypical, but hang with me. When I say the word safety, all the women nod their head and get it. And all the guys roll their eyes and they're just like, that's been used
that's
against
true.
Me. I don't know. Like that's a moving target. It's so subjective. What does it even mean?
Yeah.
You know, and it's just, it creates a crisis for the guys and for the women in general. It's just like, yep. And they nod their heads and they know exactly what they mean. And so my take on safety is this. Safety is about not having to look over your shoulder, not having to monitor your own, like your own sense of like being threatened. Now, are there things that will happen that might feel threatening but aren't unsafe? Yes.
Okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But it often is tied back to something that was actually probably unsafe. So it gets nuanced really fast. It gets really sticky. But I think that a healthy understanding...
Hang on, Jeff, because you're saying there's like triggers that will come up that are either based in reality or not based in reality. Is that what you're saying?
Are you asking me that question? Okay.
Yeah.
I'm saying that most triggers that come up in my experience are tied to something that really happened in reality somewhere.
Somewhere along the line.
To them, yes.
Yes.
Yes. I don't think we just trigger unless... Now, some people can have anxiety disorders and have other kind of mental health issues where they believe things are happening that really aren't. And that's a real thing. You can, you know, have a lot of irrational fears. I'm not going to talk about that right now. I think it's important to have that on board and be able to say like, okay, you're afraid and you have safety concerns about things that have never happened in your own life, whatever. You're just scared all the time. It's probably worth getting that checked out. It's probably getting some help and support for that. What I'm talking about is someone who's actually been betrayed, somebody who's actually had an attachment injury, attachment wound, in a primary relationship, parents, spouse, or they've been hurt or traumatized by something or someone else, then triggers are going to bring up safety concerns, whether or not in that exact moment they're in peril. So what I'm saying is just being sensitive to safety, being sensitive to those threats is in everyone's best interest in the recovery process. And so for a guy to roll his eyes this whole time and say like, oh my gosh, everything's about safety, that guy's not going to rebuild trust in the relationship.
Right, right.
And so I think on the part of the person who's trying to rebuild the trust, the unfaithful, or I usually call it like the recovering partner, I think that that person, the more they can learn and understand, not just generically what safety means, because that honestly, that's a starting point. But I think specifically what it means to their partner and where it affects their partner.
Oh, that's good.
To become an expert on what that means for their partner. Because you ask lots of good questions. And here's a little meta thing. Even just asking about the safety creates more safety.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? So caring, just caring is safe.
Yeah.
Not caring and getting irritated is unsafe.
Yeah. When you say caring, like, I really like what you just said about specifically. Because... Mm-hmm. A lot of times there's like I want a one size fits all. How do I show up for you to be safe? And the truth is your partner's triggers and life experiences are unique to them.
100%.
And the more you can understand that, the more they're going to feel loved and seen and held in that relationship, which creates that safety.
Yes.
Right.
And it is so specific. I mean, I've been married it'll be 28 years this August. And I am still discovering places where my wife has sensitivities and mm-hmm. triggers and safety things. And Yes, I've definitely like hurt my wife, and anybody who's been married this long has had some injuries. But I'm telling you, it is an ongoing discussion, discovery, and it's rich. And
Right.
I'm not afraid of it.
Right. And if you are afraid of it, that's where somebody can destroy trust and safety in the
Yes.
relationship, right? If
Yeah.
you meet that with, ultimately, I'm kind of hearing you talk about compassion, like having some compassion and understanding, then you get to build safety and trust in the relationship, right?
Absolutely. I'll give you a quick example of how sensitive this can be. And you might, again, I'm careful to share this because I don't want anybody listening to hate on my wife with this, okay? Because it's going to
Okay.
sound really sensitive, but I need you to step into my relationship for a second.
Okay.
There were a lot of years I was eating really unhealthy. And during those years, I was eating unhealthy. I wasn't taking good care of myself. I was overworking, not taking good care of myself. That was tied to a lot of lack of attention, attunement, busyness, stress, other things that were going on. It's tied to all that stuff. So recently, we're just whatever. I ended up like eating like an extra couple of desserts or something like that. I don't remember what it was. It was like some extra, it was like indulgent, right? Impulsive.
Right?
And my wife immediately went cold.
Because you ate some extra dessert. Yeah.
Right. So you could look at them and say, like, okay, Jody, seriously? Get over it, right?
Right.
But as we slowed it down, I was like, hey, what happened? We're talking. I was like shocked. I was like, what's going on? She opened up and talked about how she was surprised how when I was being indulgent or I was impulsive, her whole body just sort of went into this place of remembering like how unsafe I was during that time for her. I wasn't tuning
When
in.
you were stressed and
I was
overwhelmed
stressed. I
and
was overwhelmed. I wasn't paying attention. I wasn't very present. It was tied to my eating. And here I was, and I'm in pretty good shape, and I'm pretty healthy. I'm not like, but man, that little bit of food, that little moment, opened up a really important conversation because, do I still eat dessert? Yeah, I had some last night. It was great in front of my wife. It was fine.
Right.
But what was interesting is I recognized that when I It was a good reminder. Check yourself. Are you paying attention? Are you tuning in? Are you regulating? Are you organized? Are you staying on top of things? Are you setting good boundaries? I mean, all these things that tied into it. So that's why when I say safety conversations, if you think someday that you're going to somehow lock in safety and you'll just always be a safe person, not a thing.
Right. You're
It's not a thing.
constantly, yep.
Constantly dancing with your partner and getting clear on like triggers and old memories and wounds and stuff like that. There's no expiration date on that stuff. And it's okay.
Yep.
It's okay. But the willingness to stay in those curious conversations adds a lot of depth and richness to your relationship.
That's it. The willingness to stay in, because as you're telling this story, Jeff, first off, I'm thinking, "Gall, are we the same person?" The way I've used food to cope with the burnout of everything. But
Sure, yeah.
like the willingness to stay in that moment when she goes cold, if you
Yeah.
turn to her and get defensive and say, "Gall, like when are you gonna ever see me
Yeah.
differently?" Or
Can't even eat a
how
freaking
long,
dessert. Yeah.
yeah, I can't eat a dessert and you're
Or you
freaking
eat
out.
dessert.
Yeah. Versus, whoa, like I want to hold some space for you.
Yeah. What just
Like
happened?
you're
Yeah.
in pain. You're scared. Talk to me.
Yeah.
And when she says, "This takes me back to that time," or what, and you're like, "Yeah, that was," and you validate that. That was hard. That was
And Brandon,
tough.
it surprised her as much as it surprised me.
That she got triggered like that.
Yeah, she wasn't sitting
Yeah.
around wanting to like connect those dots,
Right.
but it
Yet,
happened, and here we are.
and it makes total sense. It
Big
happened,
time.
and here you are, and it makes total sense. And if it can make total sense to you, then you're a partner that can hold that space and create that safety with her. That's a great story. It's a great example.
Yeah,
'Cause
it
we see it all the time,
All the time.
especially when there's triggers around betrayal of like, "Whoa, where'd your eyes go?" Or, "Why'd you do this?" Right. And the guys we work with, a lot of times they abandon their partner in that moment
Yes.
in because of their own shame and their own defenses. And when they can learn how to step toward their partner in that moment, provide some space for processing that out, safety, trust gets built.
Yeah. And I think one of the hidden secrets underneath these moments is that the trigger is really about a fear of losing you.
Yeah.
Right? It's the trigger is a signal to the wife, to the betrayed wife in this case, that she's about to lose someone who really matters to her. And that's what triggers are for. Triggers are just signals for danger. And the danger is in the loss of the connection, loss of the relationship. And if you don't back it up to that, if you don't really understand how to get into that, and you just make it about what you should or shouldn't be able to do, or what you've always done, or what they do, or you start defending it or getting reactive around that, you're missing the whole point that you're important to them. And in that reactivity, unfortunately, it starts to signal that, you know, that you're now more of a threat to them. And it really just confuses everyone and becomes much more overwhelming and fear-based, because it's like, oh, I didn't want to lose you, but now I want to get away from you. And it just
throws fuel on the fire.
It's rough. Just,
yeah. When they're already feeling unsafe, you go be unsafe.
Yeah.
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 And what I'm hearing you say is, like, if my wife gets reactive to me, I get to take that as a compliment. Is that what you're saying?
It is a strange compliment. Yeah. Sometimes I'll tell couples in later stages, I'm like, you know, it's going to be weird. Like the more healing she starts to experience and the stakes become higher where she's starting to want to get closer to you, you'll notice that she'll become more sensitive.
Yeah.
And that's a gift, because she's waking up to how important you are to her.
Yeah. Yeah.
And boy, when you're in crisis mode and things are on fire, you know, she's spending a lot of her energy trying to figure out how to get away from you, or protect herself from you, or manage you. But now it's that sensitivity is really it's like an attachment distress call. And
yeah,
man, you got to know how to respond to those.
God, those are the opportunities.
Yeah.
Like that, you know, just last week I was talking to a friend and his wife was all triggered and angry and just pissed off at him.
Yeah.
And he was like, I could see him bouncing around like, okay, do I go into fix it mode?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't do anything wrong. I need to tell her I didn't do anything wrong. I did. And I just stopped him and I like held him by the shoulders. I was like, hey, this is awesome. Like, mm-hmm. this is your opportunity. It's moments like this that are opportunities for you to go build trust with her.
Yeah.
Like, so just step into your strength here and hold space for her and don't make it about you.
Yeah.
I make that sound so easy, right?
I know.
But knowing
what's happening can make it easier. I think, you know, knowing what's happening, even retrospectively, even if you go back and look at it and say, man, what just happened or what's been happening, and you can make sense of the process, you can create a new beginning and interrupt a cycle. And it doesn't matter if it's something that has been going on for a while. The moment that you understand it, you can have the courage to interrupt it.
That's absolutely true. Yep.
It's never, yep. I'm not gonna say it's never too late, but it's more often than not too late.
Yes. Yes. And even when it seems a little too late, going to do that repair work can actually give more opportunity for yes. trust building, right? Mm-hmm. Even if you messed up, if you got defensive, or if you, then it's like, whoa, I'm conscious of this now. Now, like, I can be here and do this work with you. Hopefully they're willing to hang in there with you. So
we were talking about safety, and safety is, I think that, again, I'm just going to, again, generalize with men and women. Women feel unsafe most of the time, even when they've not been betrayed. Women feel unsafe just physiologically most of the time. You ask any woman who, you know, walking at night, walking, you know, alone, and then a guy walks next to her. I mean, there's just, they are tuning into things on a safety level that most guys are not even aware of or worrying about. And so physiologically, emotionally, there is just a safety reality that they live in. And when you've added an actual betrayal to that, you've just heightened their sensitivity around that, especially in the place where they didn't have to think about their safety.
Yep.
This that the marriage or the home and the family, this is the one place when they leave the home, their safety stuff starts to go up, right? Because they're in a more unpredictable, unsafe environment with people who don't care about them or going to protect them. But when that's now ground zero in their own home and marriage, they can't get a break from the thing that they already struggle with. I mean, when I leave my home, my safety levels don't change up or down.
Right.
For me. I know they do for my wife to a degree. You know, it's but in the home is the one place we should be able to not ever feel unsafe.
Right.
Just be able to relax and be ourselves. Literally be naked. Literally have, you know, total freedom and safety. And when you're the one that's introduced that threat in your own home, you have to take that so seriously.
Yep.
And you just can't minimize that. And if you minimize that, you're going to have a very difficult time, if not impossible time, creating any kind of trust in this relationship.
Yep. It's interesting you're bringing this up. I can't remember if it was Jordan Peterson or who it was, but was talking about how women naturally look for a couple of things in men. And it's because as women get pregnant and they need to be taken care of and they're taking care of a baby, they need a man who is confident and can provide, mm-hmm. and a man who is kind and patient through the process of that.
Yeah. That's right. And who can handle himself.
Yep. Who can handle himself through that. And mm-hmm. because women are vulnerable in those states in
absolutely
rearing children. And yeah. And so it's a natural thing for a woman to really need safety mm-hmm. in a relationship. And when they really need safety from their partner and he's the source of the opposite of that,
right,
it just creates space that a woman can't feel comfortable in a relationship.
Yeah, so, where is she supposed to go for that? I mean, girlfriends might be nice, mom might be nice, but she doesn't want to be a child anymore.
Right.
There's just if
they
already,
and they can't provide that.
No.
Girlfriends and moms can't provide that.
No. No, yeah. It's not the same. It's not the same at all. And yeah, it's just one of those things that if you don't get the safety idea as someone who's broken trust, if you think that somehow that should be resolved quickly or that you, I don't know, can just do a few things and restore it, it's just an ongoing lived condition, whether or not you've ever betrayed your partner or not. It's something just to be sensitive to and aware of. Again, I know we're speaking in a really gendered way right now. I'm okay with it because I see it. Just, I think there's some realities here that we have to acknowledge.
Uh-huh.
I have three sons and a daughter. My daughter's almost 15 and my sons are all grown up. They're all out of the house. And living with my daughter and watching her develop and grow and just the things that it's been a real eye opener raising three sons. I understood all that pretty well. You know, there mm-hmm. were things I had to learn, but for the most part, I got them. I understood it. And I'm learning a lot. I'm learning a lot about these safety issues and around all the different things that are on their minds and they worry about that I think are just so incredibly, I think, invisible to a lot of guys who, if you're not paying attention. And admittedly, I've worked with thousands of women over my career. I've been married forever. But seeing it through the eyes of a young, developing girl, my daughter, has been a real eye-opener for
me. That's interesting.
It's created a lot more sensitivity and awareness around things that I just, I don't know, didn't see or didn't acknowledge before. It's been a really powerful reawakening or maybe awakening in some areas. And so I just feel like, okay, we can all do better.
Yep.
And I also don't believe that we should wrap people in bubble wrap and not expect hard things.
Right.
And not challenge or expect growth. And so on. But if you're the one that created the damage, you're not the one that can ask for that right out the gate.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just can't.
Yep.
You got to earn that right. Yeah.
That's true. And, you know, we're running low on time, but there's one more question I want to ask you, Jeff. And it's about somebody who has broken trust.
Mm-hmm.
In my younger years, I was taught similar to what you just said, but different. You don't have a leg to stand on. You don't have a right to have boundaries. you need basically need to shut up and comply here, right? Is it important for the partner who has betrayed to have boundaries in order to build trust?
Totally. I think that's part of how they're going to build trust.
Yes.
And I think they first start, this goes back to my dessert example. Me having personal boundaries around my own impulses and bossing my own life is going to create safety for my partner. In other words, if my partner can see that I'm handling myself, which is all boundary work, start there first. A lot of guys want to be like, well, you can't affect me this way. I'm going to set my boundaries by, you know, block, you know. Yeah, I'm going to focus all my boundary work on my relationship. And it's like, yeah, but what about your, what about yourself? Maybe look at being boundaried individually first. And there's so much work all of us can do in that area. And that's everything from people pleasing to right food or other compulsions or, you know, just screen time. I mean, I can list off 100 ways that we can be more boundaried individually. In my experience, a lot of that will create a, more conditions of safety. Now, in some cases, you're regulated, you're boundaried, you've done a lot of personal work around that stuff. And let's say your partner is still yelling, screaming, name-calling, physically abusive, who knows what. There's all kinds of things that can happen in trauma responses or in just having bad family patterns or habits or whatever. There's all kinds of reasons for that. So I'm not going to get into that. But is some guy there, does he have a right to speak up, to self-preserve, to expect some sort of order? Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah. And sometimes even before they've had a chance to be boundaried themselves, and you've got a spouse who's traumatized and they're violent, of course you've got to protect yourself and the people in your care.
Absolutely.
It's not in your partner's best interest to be violent. And you have to, if you want to be protective, you have to create order and establish that. And that's an agonizing thing to say, I know I'm the one that did all this to you, and I'm actually now having to create boundaries and
this doesn't
stop
work.
Think,
yeah.
Oh, that's hard.
Mm-hmm. But we kind of have come full circle here, because when I asked you where we start and you said with truth, and the reality is even in those hard moments after betrayal, if you don't show up in truth and you're a doormat and you're caretaking because you feel like you deserve to just be beaten down, you're not showing up in truth. And you can show up in truth and kindness and empathetic at the same time. You can do those things at the same time. You don't have to be a jackass.
But it will feel dishonest to your partner if you aren't honoring what's actually happening.
Exactly.
Right. So in some ways it's going to register as dishonest.
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, there's some layers here.
It's tricky. You might trigger her thinking, Jeff, I could talk with you for a long time.
We got to do it again, man.
Yeah. I mean, I've been learning from you for ever since I got into this, and you're just such a wealth of knowledge and just hours and hours of experience. It's just really a treat to talk to you today. So let's definitely do it again.
Yeah, let's do it again. I'd love to have you on as a guest on my podcast, even though we're sharing this episode on both of our platforms. I'll reach out and we'll do it again. It'd be fun.
Well, Jeff, where just for those listeners on our podcast, where do they find you?
Yeah, let's trade information so people can know how to find both of us. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the easiest way to find me is starting point would be just my website. And you can go to it's fromcrisistoconnection.com. You can also I have a podcast that I do with my wife called From Crisis to Connection.
Awesome.
And we talk pretty honestly about all these things. And those are probably the two best places. And then I have on my website, you'll see it. You can find my social media, programs, courses, things like that. But that's a great place to start.
Okay. Awesome.
Likewise, and where can people find you? What are you doing?
Therapybrothers.com and then the Therapy Brothers podcast. That's where you get most of the information. And then from there you can find all the other stuff we're doing. And Tyler and I got all kinds of stuff. So
yeah, that's awesome. And for my listeners listening to this, Brandon podcast with his brother, Tyler, they're both therapists.
Yeah.
It's super cool.
Yep. Yep. All right, awesome. You guys, thank you for listening. If this was helpful, please share it and leave us a rating and a review, and we'll talk to you next time. We'll see you.
Once again, everyone, thanks so much for listening. And I want to thank Brandon and his brother Tyler for inviting me to be a guest on their podcast. So much fun to discuss all this stuff. And you can learn more about the Therapy Brothers on their website, therapybros.com. And of course, you can download the free resource, The First Steps to Rebuilding Trust, which you can click on the link in the show notes, and I'll send that to you right away. Thanks for joining us, and we'll look forward to being with you again next week.